I haven't met that many happy people in my life. How do they act? It's the big chill.
It's about everything. Suicide, despair, where did our hope go? Lost hope, that's it, lost hope.
Columbia Pictures invites you,
oh, you wanna leave me,
to return to the weekend that started it all.
No!
Remember the music,
Thriller,
and the moments.
The ground is ready. You just need someone to plant the seed.
Yeah, but who's going to be the lucky farmer?
You want me to what?
The friendship.
Oh, my God!
And the romance.
Alex and I made love the night before he died. It was fantastic.
The laughter and the tears.
I feel like I was at my best when I was with you people.
Not me. Getting with you people is the best thing ever happened to me. I mean, how much sex, fun, friendship can one man take?
15 years ago, The Big Chill helped launch the careers of some of today's biggest stars and became one of the most memorable films of the decade.
You were hallucinating pretty bad that night. We didn't even have any drugs.
Now, on November 6th, The Big Chill is back on the big screen.
Really?
Really?
On a digitally remastered print and in stereo for the first time. Tom Berenger, Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, Kevin Klein, Mary Kay Place, Meg Tilly, and Joe Beth Williams.
You know, you'd never get a crowd this big at my funeral.
Oh, Karen, come on, I'll come and, I'll bring a date.
In a cold world.
Wise up, folks, we're all alone out there.
You still need your friends to keep you warm.
I don't know what people think about me.
You don't have that problem here. You know I don't like you.
I'll be right back.
The Big Chill, a Lawrence Kasdan film. In theaters November 6th.
Welcome back to Mystery Watchability, a Podbean podcast. I'm sorry for the Killer Clowns from Outer Space episode. I didn't have much to say about that movie. It was pretty wild and odd, and yeah, my brain just evidently couldn't process it. But I have plenty of things to say about this movie. This is a movie I enjoy so much, I own it on VHS, DVD, and digital. Triple threat, like Laserdisc should probably be in there, but I don't have that. You may ask why a Gen Z kid would enjoy this. Well, this episode might give you the answer, but it could also be that I'm an old soul and I don't typically like what everyone my age likes. It's 1983, and what a year that was. High-ranking Nazi war criminal, Klaus Barbie is arrested in Bolivia. The final episode of the TV series MASH, entitled Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, airs on CBS to a total audience of 121.6 million. The Disney Channel launches in the United States, and the Jules Rimet Trophy is stolen from the Brazilian Soccer Confederation building in Rio de Janeiro. The location of the trophy is still unknown. Celebrities Emily Blunt, Chris Hemsworth, Mila Kunis, Amy Winehouse, Lupita Nyong'o, Adam Driver, and Carrie Underwood were born. Tennessee Williams, Gloria Swanson, Norma Shearer, Ira Gershwin, Slim Pickens, and George Headley die. And the top movies of that year were Return of the Jedi, Terms of Endearment, Trading Places, Tootsie, and today's film, The Big Chill. Cast and crew of The Big Chill are Tom Berenger as Sam. He's an actor in this movie, but and in real life, of course, or else he wouldn't be playing anyone. Anyway, after that big mess, he's in the films Looking for Mr. Goodbar, Platoon, for which he earned an Oscar nomination for actor in a supporting role, Inception, Someone to Watch Over Me, and The Substitute. Glenn Close plays Sarah. She's in The World According to Garp, which she got an Oscar nomination for. Fatal Attraction, which she also got an Oscar nomination for. 101 Dalmatians, Tarzan, The Wife, and The Natural. Both of the latter she also got Oscar nominations for. Jeff Goldblum as Michael. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Jurassic Park, The Fly, Nashville, Annie Hall, and Independence Day. William Hurt as Nick. He's in Broadcast News. Love that movie. I will do an episode on that. Cannot talk about that movie enough. Body Heat. The MCU films as Captain Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross. Children of a Lesser God, and A History of Violence. Kevin Kline as Harold. Fish Called Wanda, which he won an Oscar for actor in a supporting role for. In-N-Out, which has possibly the best Joan Cusack performance of all time. The Ice Storm, Dave, The Road to El Dorado, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mary Kay Place as Meg. She's in Being John Malkovich, Private Benjamin, which is a fantastic Goldie Hawn movie. You need to watch it. Sweet Home Alabama, Latter Days, The Prom, and Shrek Forever After. Meg Tilly as Chloe. She's in Agnes of God, Psycho 2, The Two Jakes, and War Machine, which is on Netflix. She's also the sister of Jennifer Tilly, who is in the Child's Play franchise, and she's also the voice of Celia in Monsters, Inc. Jennifer Tilly, not Meg Tilly. And Jo Beth Williams as Karen. She's in Kramer vs. Kramer, Poltergeist, Jungle to Jungle, Fever Pitch, and The Big Year. Kevin Costner as Alex. Bull Durham, Field of Dreams, Fandango. The TV series Yellowstone, Dances with Wolves, and JFK. Lawrence Kasdan, the director and writer of the film, is also a writer before he directed the films Body Heat and Silverado and The Big Chill and Grand Canyon. He wrote the films The Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Bodyguard. And then there's Barbara Benedict, his writing partner for this film, who wrote Immediate Family, Men Don't Leave, Sabrina, and The Big Chill. Lawrence Kasdan and Barbara Benedict began writing The Big Chill in September 1980, 5 months after the release of Return to the Secaucus 7. They wrote the screenplay as a semi-autobiographical story, inspired by their optimistic political activism while attending college in the 1960s, and then their disillusionment with society in the 1970s. While attending the University of Michigan, Kasdan lived at the Eugene V. Debs Cooperative House in the late 1960s, and his co-op experiences informed the screenplay's direction. Many of the characters were based on his housemates, and how they cook communal meals and share their house echoes Ann Arbor Cooperative's culture. Kasdan and Benedict worked on Benedict. I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher her last name. I'm so sorry, Barbara, wherever you are. Worked on the screenplay as Kasdan was directing Body Heat. While the other characters in the films weren't written with any specific actors in mind, Kasdan wrote the role of Nick for Body Heat star William Hurt, who gave Kasdan a commitment to do The Big Chill. This is one of three films that they do together. William Hurt comes back after this for The Accidental Tourist, which I probably should have mentioned that Kasdan also worked on. Kasdan first pitched the story to the Ladd Company, but was rejected. Richard Fischoff unsuccessfully tried to convince Paramount Pictures to film the screenplay after reading it in the summer of 1982. When this failed, he returned the screenplay to Marcia Nassar. I'm sorry if I'm butchering these last names, who had recently departed her executive positions at United Artists and Orion Pictures to co-found Carson Productions with Johnny Carson. Who'd have thought? The TV host. Johnny Carson would have his own production company. Well, he did. That's a fun fact. Fischoff convinced Nassiter, I'm sorry, this is so bad, to finance the film as the studio's first production and took over as supervising producer after she left the studio to work at 20th Century Fox. Production on the film began on November 8, 1982 in Atlanta. Filming primarily took place at the Edgar Fripp house called Title Home in downtown Beaufort, South Carolina, where the film was set. Kasdan's wife, Meg, was in charge of compiling period-appropriate songs for the soundtrack. She heard I Heard It Through the Grapevine for the first time in many years while picking her son up at camp, listening to a Marvin Gaye cassette, and was struck by how the song with no dialogue would make a perfect start to the film. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 71% based on reviews from 41 critics with an average rating of 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb. The site's critical consensus, oh my gosh, I'm not having a stroke, I promise, reads, The Big Chill captures a generation's growing ennui with a terrific cast, a handful of perceptive insights, and one of the decade's best film soundtracks. On Metacritic, the film has a weighted average of 61 out of 100 based on reviews from 12 critics, indicating generally favorable reviews. Now into the best scenes. The opening.
Chosen hands to make me blue with some other guy you
The Funeral Procession.
It's pretty strong stuff.
Ugh, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
Last time I spoke with Alex, we had a fight. I yelled at him.
That's probably why he killed himself.
We decided that we would have a soul.
What was the argument about?
I told him he was wasting his life.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, just mind.
You all right?
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed, though. I wanted to write up there. I've always wanted to ride in a limo.
I do half my work in limos.
Are you a chauffeur?
No, I'm a journalist. I write for People magazine. I can't believe you're still mad about that thing.
Michael, this isn't the time. Let's just drop it.
Yeah, well, I will if you will. You know, on this day, most of all, we should remember we're friends.
Right.
And you're an actor?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so hurt today at the reception. In a glare, was bleeding man.
I mean, nothing like you described. Not at all. Not one of those people looks like I thought they would. I can't believe these are the same people you've been talking about all these years, really. I'd love to hear the way you describe me to them.
Late night snack.
Flow over you.
I'm hungry. I had this really dirty dream.
Is it about Karen?
Why do you say that?
Why should anything have changed?
You're the one she always wanted.
In the old days, I wasn't emotionally equipped to satisfy her. Now, as we know, the equipment doesn't work at all.
Why do we have to talk about that?
Come on out of the kitchen with me.
She found what she was looking for in Richard.
Yep. Be careful what you want, young lady. You will surely get it.
Hi. Hey, Richard. What are you doing up? Why didn't you come in?
I didn't realize anybody else was up. I've been thinking about your friend Alex.
Did you ever meet him?
No. Karen's told me some. I'm imagining mostly. Never make it through the night. Insomnia. Karen doesn't even know it.
You might have something that could help you sleep.
No, thanks. No. I don't really mind it so much. Sometimes when my family's asleep, I just sit downstairs alone and it's so quiet. I hate not being able to sleep, but I don't really mind the time alone. Sometimes I think the thing about kids is their instant priorities. You know you have to protect them and provide for them and sometimes it means your life isn't exactly the way you want it to be. There's some asshole at work you have to kowtow to, and sometimes you find yourself doing things you never really thought you'd ever do. But you try to minimize that stuff and be the best person you can be. But you set your priorities, and that's the way life is. I wonder if your friend Alex knew that. One thing's for sure, he couldn't live with it. I know I shouldn't talk. You guys knew him. But the thing is, nobody said it was going to be fun. least nobody said it to me.
Self-interview.
So, you came back from Vietnam a changed man.
Well, why don't you just tell everybody?
Then, in 1972, you returned to the University of Michigan to enter the doctoral program in psychology, but you just couldn't seem to finish that dissertation.
I could have. I chose not to. I'm not hung up on this completion thing.
Then it was onto a series of jobs, all of which you quit.
What are you getting at? I was evolving. I'm still evolving.
But your real fame came as a radio psychologist on KSFO in San Francisco.
I wouldn't call it fame exactly. I had a small, deeply disturbed following. What are you doing now? Or I should say, what have you evolved into now? Oh, I'm in sales. What are you selling? I don't have to answer that.
Nick, we're leaving. Have you seen Chloe?
Harold, we're on the air here.
Oh. Sorry.
Sorry, pal. Gotta go. Just answer that last question. Bye, sir.
Dinner.
All right, I'll tell you one thing I do want is one of those cosmic invaders games. Yeah. Or my trailer so Nick and I can watch it and kick back and relax between the shots.
What do you mean?
Video games? You're telling me you relax with video games?
Oh, hey, don't knock video games.
I let you guys out of my sight for a little while and you develop a bunch of moronic interests.
Hey, don't knock morons.
Meg, would you prefer we got into heavy drugs?
Yeah, that might be better.
No offense, Nick.
Hey, right? Sarah.
Drugs?
He should be here. I feel like we should have had a chair for Alex. Of course, we don't have enough food, but... I know this is all so familiar, and I love you all so much. I know that sounds gross, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
I feel like I was at my best when I was with you people.
I know what you mean, sir. When I lost touch with this group, I lost my idea of what I should be. Maybe that's what happened to Alex. At least we expected something of each other then. I think we needed that.
Not me. Getting away from you people is the best thing ever happened to me. I mean, how much sex, fun, friendship can one man take? I'd get out in the world, get dirty.
No, I'll tell you, I think Sam is right. I mean, there was something in me then that, made me want to go to Harlem and teach those ghetto kids.
Yes, and I was going to help the scum, as I so compassionately refer to them now.
Some of them are scum. Some of us are scum.
Oh, so what's the thrust here? We were great then and we're shit now? I don't buy that.
That's not what we're saying, Harold. You know that. I don't know. I'd hate to think that it was all just fashion.
What?
Our commitment.
It wasn't. We accomplished things.
All evidence to the contrary.
Now you're just taking a position.
Sometimes I think I've put that time down, pretended it wasn't real, just so I can live with how I am now. You know what I mean?
Nick, help me with these bleeding hearts.
I know what Alex would say.
What?
What's for dessert?
Trying to get pregnant.
You want me to do what?
Come on, Sam. Don't make me say it again.
Oh, Meg.
You're not going to use that old excuse, are you? You've got good genes.
Where'd Chloe go?
She's coming right back.
No, I'm not in the mood.
Oh, hey, wait, where's it, a lewd?
You want it?
What do you think I have?
Full stomach, I'd take a hole.
Yes, right. Well, I'm sure you would. What the hell was I?
There's a little shift in your perceptions of the world. Forever you're responsible for another living thing. Ah, it's wonderful. But it's a huge commitment. A commitment that has nothing to do with legal names and legal obligations. I'm sorry, Meg. I'd love to help you, but I can't.
You know, you're something. I love you.
Meg, really,
can't. No, I accept that. I mean, I really love you. You're a nice person.
Nick's monologue.
So what do you think? If you'd been in touch with him, you could have saved his life? You have that kind of effect on the people in your life? Keep them all jolly, do you? Wise up, folks. We're all alone out there, and tomorrow we're going out there again. I think it was damn straight of Alex not to cook up some neat phony Reader's Digest condensation of his screwed up life for our entertainment. I am so sick of people selling their psyches for a little attention. He was classier than that.
Yeah, it was a real classy act he pulled in the bathtub.
Hey, you know, for some people it isn't a question of why to kill yourself, but why not?
Oh, Nick, give me a break. Spare us the tragic existential pose.
Sorry, Sam, didn't mean to get into your area.
Come on now, guys, we're all friends here.
This is a well-known dynamic. I've seen it a million times. Some people ease the pain of separation by denigrating a relationship.
You're so deep.
I think Michael's right. I feel shitty about 10 different ways tonight. I don't want to let any of this go.
That's healthy. The only way to avoid pain like that is to pretend you don't care. I know I've left more places than you'll ever go to.
Give him your pose line, Sam. There's the existential man for you. You're one tough cookie, aren't you? I could say you're one cold, manipulative, using guy, and it wouldn't bother you a bit.
I'm deeply hurt.
Well, at least our last night's gonna be a fun one.
Please don't do this, guys. This is happening because we all really miss him, and we're really hurting.
I think that's a crock of shit. I think we're afraid just the opposite is true. Alex died for most of us a long time ago.
I think you're a crock of shit. Don't speak for me or anybody else here. You hate your life. That's your problem. Don't tell us how we feel, okay?
That's it. That's all I'm saying. If I hate my life, that's my problem. Too bad you went around to comfort Alex just as compassionately.
Hey, Nick. And we go back a long way. And I'm not gonna piss that away because you're higher than a kite.
Wrong. A long time ago, we knew each other for a short period. You don't know anything about me. It was easy back then. No one ever had a cushier birth than we did. It's not surprising our friendship could survive that. It's only out here in the world that it gets tough.
Nick.
I don't care what you say. I know I loved you and everybody else here. And I'll go on believing that till I kick.
Now into the Oscars. The Big Chill was nominated for 3 Academy Awards. Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay for Kasdan and Benedict, and Best Supporting Actress for Glenn Close. The film won 0 awards. Best Quotes. Meg. I'm going to wash my hair and puke. Michael. puke first. Meg, the last time I spoke with Alex, we had a fight. I yelled at him. Nick, that's probably why he killed himself. What was the argument about? Meg, I told him he was wasting his life. Chloe, Alex and I made love before he died. It was fantastic. Nick, you went out with a bang, not a whimper. That is my favorite line in the entire movie. So funny. Just makes me laugh. So hard. It's so dark, but it's so funny. Nick. Hey everyone, it's JT Lancer. Let's all go watch this incredible show. Sarah, woohoo! Everyone runs into the living room. Karen, come on, Sam! I like that Tom Berger's character is just such a Magnum P.I. spoof. You can tell it's like glamorous locations, him jumping over and into cars, the mustache, the curly hair. Tom Selleck, if he got cast in The Big Chill, that would just be meta on a whole new level, and I would have loved that so much. Fun facts and goofs. Kevin Kline met his future wife, Phoebe Cates, when she auditioned for the part of Chloe, which eventually went to Meg Tilly. I enjoy Phoebe Cates from Gremlins. I have not seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but we all know about that pool scene. Meg Tilly was a perfect choice for Chloe, and I dare you to tell me otherwise. Flashback scenes with Kevin Costner as Alec Marshall were filmed, but then cut out of the movie. Costner is still visible as the body being dressed at the beginning of the film. The main cast members lived together for a few weeks before filming began. After the movie was made and released, actor Tom Berenger loved the film's main shooting location of the Teitelhelm Mansion so much, he later got married in his garden on its lawn. For the scenes in which director Lawrence Kasdan anticipated using music, he would have the actors deliver their lines in much louder voices than normal. This was done so that when the songs were added to the soundtrack later, in post-production, the lines would be heard clearly above the music and sound natural. Michael's girlfriend Annie, seen only during the opening titles, is played by Jeff Goldblum's then-wife, Patricia Gall. We all know he went for Gina Davis not that long after this movie. That did not last long. Sean Penn was considered for the role of Alex Marshall, which was greatly reduced. In the end, Kevin Costner was cast in the role, then all of his scenes were deleted. According to the one-hour documentary, The Big Chill, A Reunion, which is on the DVD features. I don't know if it's on the Criterion because I don't own it. Sorry, guys. I was really torn between that and The Silence of the Lambs, and I decided to get The Silence of the Lambs Criterion, so don't get angry. I will get The Big Chill. Don't worry. A supernatural event apparently occurred during principal photography, where a sound technician recorded the sound of a ghost and was allegedly, I cannot talk today, guys, this is bad, and I'm doing a podcast, freaked out by the event. Cast and the crew ran to the technician's truck to hear what had been recorded. It doesn't say if anything was actually heard or not. As the characters clean up following the dinner, the turkey platter is simultaneously on the kitchen table and the dining room table. Double turkeys. Ooh, who'd have thunk? The fog completely disappears after Harold's brief close-up shot when he and Nick are jogging through town. As the movie opens, an older couple is walking up to the church, but both are clearly standing still, arm in arm, until they get their cue to walk. What's aged the best? The acting. The acting is great in this film. Everyone's bringing something to the characters. They're very compelling. Especially to me, the most are William Hurt, Meg Tilly, Joe Beth Williams, and Tom Berenger. To me, those are the most compelling characters to me. I like Kevin Kline and Glenn Close, Mary Kay Place, and Jeff Goldblum, but they're just not holding a candle to the other four. Meg Tilly has aged the best because she has a fantastic YouTube channel. I don't remember if it's like Tea Time with Meg, something with Meg. Just put in Meg Tilly on YouTube, and she just... She has videos of her just having a cup of tea with her husband. She'll have tea with Jennifer, her sister, and they'll just be talking about books they read or movies. And sometimes she'll talk about The Big Chill, and she'll just dish out everything she experienced while watching, not while watching, but while acting in it. And looking back on it years later, she's just a happy person. She's so, withdrawn in this movie, and, like, to herself, because, you know, it's very traumatic for her, she doesn't know how to react, but in real life, she's just so bubbly, I would be friends with her. The soundtrack has aged phenomenally, I really need to talk better. Meg Kasdan did really good, especially with I Heard It Through the Grapevine, which is hands down the best opening song for a movie that I've ever seen. It's a fantastic way to introduce your characters. It sets up everything you need to know about them without having to say anything. It's like in Thelma and Louise, like Callie Corey just... You know, in the movie, she doesn't write Thelma and Louise is both like, oh, one's very neat and clean, and the other one's like kind of messy. She doesn't like, they don't say it out loud, they just show you that. That way you can be like, oh, one's neat, one's messy, you know. You don't need the, you don't need it being, like, poured over you constantly. And that's what I like about I Heard It Through the Grapevine. It's just great exposition. And the J.T. Lancers show, I mentioned it earlier, just mere minutes ago, about the whole Magnum P.I. parody-ish. It would have been great if Tom Selleck was in this movie. I think it'd probably be... He'd probably have a different career if he did this movie. What's aged the worst? Kevin Kline's running shorts. I was afraid I was gonna see some things while he was running, because those shorts leave very little to the imagination. And when I first watched this film, this isn't my first time seeing it, but when I saw it, like, a while ago, I was just, oh my gosh, I was terrified something was gonna leap out of there. Also, Kevin Kline's southern accent, you can hear it slip through, because he'll sound like New York Kevin Kline, you know, from Dave and A Fish Called Wanda, and then he'll be like really southern Kevin Kline, and he sounds kind of like Foghorn Leghorn. And it gets concerning. The pregnancy B-plot, oh my god, so Mary Kay Place's character just wants to have a child, and she just feels like all men in the world are scum, except for the four men she's been around, but she won't do it with Jeff Goldblum's character, because he's just a horrible person, which I'm about to get into that after this, but, she just asks around, and she asks William Hurt's character, but he's impotent, and she's like, oh, well, that's not going to work. And then she's like, it's Tom Berenger, and Tom Berenger's like, I can't do that. And then he ends up making love with Joe Beth Williams later on. But, and then it's like Kevin Kline's like, I'll do it, and, you know, it's just, it's really weird. It's just, it's weird. But that's one of the things I can change about the movie, which is one of the very little, there's very few things I change about this movie, but the pregnancy B-plot, yeah, that's a, it's a big problem for me. Jeff Goldblum's character, Michael, is a horrible, horrible human being, not because he writes for People magazine, but he's just, he's a pig, just, he's, he's trying to get with Chloe, who's, you know, currently grieving and whatnot, and just, it's not worth, no. It's just lines that should, that shouldn't be crossed, especially while trying to mourn the death of your friend. And finally, no Oscar nominations for Meg Tilly and William Hurt. They both should have been nominated. Meg definitely over Glenn Close. And William Hurt definitely should have got a nomination for supporting actor as Nick, because they give the best performances in the movie, because they are the two most damaged people. Even though, spoiler, Glenn Close's character Sarah does mention that she has an affair with, or had an affair with, a Kevin Costner's character, but we don't see that. But we also don't see why Nick is an addict and drug dealer, and why Chloe's the way she is. But they play it with such simplistic, like, I can't explain it. It's just they're it's just natural. And you relate. I relate a lot more to them than I do Glenn Close's character when she's mourning. And a little special for this episode. You're going to hear. Well, if you want to. If you don't, skip ahead 18 minutes to the end. So I can tell you. Who. What. Episode. Will be coming out next week. But. Before you do that. If you want to. Like I said. Listen for 18 minutes. Because. You will hear. Turner Classic Movies. Film Festivals. Interview with Joe Beth Williams and Tom Berenger, hosted by Ben Mankiewicz. Joe Beth Williams, Tom Berenger, Ben Mankiewicz on The Big Chill.
Thank you.
So, first of all, I don't always think it's fair to suggest that a movie needs to hold up, right? I mean, movies are meant for the time that they're released. But man, The Big Chill holds up. Still packs the same emotional punch. Have you guys seen it recently?
Well, we saw it on the big screen 10 years ago at the Toronto
in the
anniversary
Toronto Film Festival.
For our 30th. And I've seen it in the last couple of years, yeah.
So, it's clear that this, the whole production process, this was not a normal movie. What you guys experienced with this young director, Lawrence Kasdan, this was not how most movies are made in pre-production. What was different about this one?
Well, we had 4 weeks of rehearsal, which is unheard of for a movie. I've never had that before or since. Have you, Tom?
No. And
with all that dialogue and stuff, I remember my agent saying, or an ex-agent actually, saying, well, it's nice. No, he was good, don't get me wrong. But he said, it's nice to see a movie with lots of dialogue. And I said, well, it was kind of like a play.
Yeah, it was grown-ups talking to each other.
It was. And Larry Kasdan, our director, really wanted us to become an ensemble before we went to Buford and started shooting in the house. He wanted us to get to know each other, to play with each other in character, we did improvisations, mm-hmm. and it was so much fun.
And it wasn't just, you weren't rehearsing at the house or in Atlanta where the flashback scenes were shot that then ended up.
Well, we did that later.
You did that later, but yeah. The first 2 weeks was this, you're in
LA.
Locked yeah. in a room.
I called it a think tank at the yeah. time, but it was a rehearsal.
And what was that experience? That was reading through the script?
No, it was, improvising, literally creating our relationships as they had been when we were in college.
Yeah, kind of making up past lives for ourselves. So we had all the subtext behind us and everybody kind of gelled and understood what that was. Then we did improvisations within that, I suppose. And then finally says, okay, it's time to learn the dialogue. Which we did word for word, like you would a play.
And he was a little like Alfred Hitchcock in the sense that what he wrote on the paper, that's pretty much what he wanted you to say, yeah? What he and Barbara Benedict wrote on the paper.
There were a few little changes here and there.
He didn't, I mean, we couldn't improvise once we were shooting. He wanted the lines as written, and with good reason. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, sometimes directors will say, oh, well, you know, add a whatever you want, or no. He didn't, but he wasn't that rigid. I mean,
yeah, and when we rehearsed it, particularly in the house, because there were outside locations around town, etc. But when we rehearsed it, we blocked the scenes like you would on a stage in the theater, and they put marks down for each character, and they had settings for the lights, and when we came back. We went to Atlanta for a week, mm-hmm. and when we came back, all that was set. It's like we walked on a stage that all the furniture was there, all the props were there, everything was set. And the camera, the lights were hanging on grids across the room, and there were marks on the floor. It was one of the most organized things I ever worked on, and I mean, 1 hour of overtime, I believe, the whole shoot.
But some of those days, well, I want to get to, you're in Buford, right? Some of those days were pretty long. A lot of scenes, like four scenes, set around the table eating. And
eating scenes are always
yeah. Well, tell everybody why. What's so tough about doing scenes like that as an actor?
Well, because you have to match when you're eating, and the next setup, the next shot, you have to do exactly the same thing that you did in the last shot. So every shot, you have to repeat exactly what you did.
And then they need covering shots of everyone reacting to what everybody just said. So, I mean, what one scene, 4 minutes at the table, that might take
you have to work all the way around the table. And besides maybe doing each character, you also get twos.
Right.
You do twos.
And you learn not to take big bites.
Yes.
Right.
Because you're going to be eating over and over again.
You tend to use your napkin to wipe your face a lot.
So what was clear is that Larry wanted you guys to bond, and then your independent streak and dissatisfaction with the hotel ended up fueling that camaraderie that you guys got. What did you leave away there, Tom?
And I remember everybody's going, well, where are we going to stay? Or where are you going to stay? Or where are you going to? And I'm like, I'm not too worried about that. And they go, well, we want to be in town right next to the set. And Larry, of course, did because he's a director and has to be there and, you know, first guy there in the morning, usually. But I talked to John Reed, the Teamster captain, and he goes, they got these great little houses out on an island, out on Harbor Island, faces the Atlantic Ocean, and they're built right on the sand, and they're kind of elevated, and they're really cool, and it's like you're just out there alone. And I went, ooh.
This is the off-season, so they're empty.
They're off-season, right, empty. And so I went out and got one, and then Bill O'Hurt said to me, he goes, where are you staying anyway? I said, oh, I'm out on Harbor Island. They got these great little units, and, you know, and they're available for rent and off season. He says, I'm going out there. So he moved out. I don't know who was next, but it was.
And then we all moved.
And then finally, yeah, everybody moved out to the island because we couldn't be apart. Because we'd spent all this time doing improvisations and think tanks and, you know. And
we were tethered to each other.
So, and like.
We were afraid to be alone.
Kevin Kline, Jeff Goldblum got a place together, and all three women.
Yeah, Glenn and Mary Kay and
Mary
I got.
Kay, she was the last one to move out, but she did.
Yeah.
She couldn't stand it. Yeah. Then her brother came. He played the South Carolina State Trooper, and he moved in the house with her. I go, how's that going? He says, she's driving me nuts. I go, well,
and then,
you should
and then,
have known that.
And then Larry moved out with the whole
Larry and the family. Yeah. Yeah. And even he moved out. I guess he wasn't very close to the set.
It was great, though.
I remember, like, poker games, charade games, and...
Trivial Pursuit.
Trivial Pursuit, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I caught Jeff Goldblum cheating at charades. Yeah, he
charades,
cheated.
Yeah.
He was looking, we're playing charades. He goes to the bowl that has all the things you act out, you know, and he starts reading them all. I said, Jeff, what are you doing? He said, oh, I'm looking for the one I want to do. I said, yeah, but now you've seen the answers
now you
to
know all the answers.
Yeah. He went, oh, yeah.
So it was a nice time capsule because I heard in a documentary, Glenn Close, who wanted to be here, by the way, that she brought Trivial Pursuit down from Canada, where I guess she'd been working, and had yet to be released here in the United States. So you guys were like Trivial Pursuit pioneers.
We were, and we were nuts about the game.
Yeah, we were.
We became addicted.
Does that make a difference? That camaraderie that he sought so badly, that he forced effectively in Los Angeles, then happened organically in Beaufort or on Harbor Island.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think it really fed our relationships.
I mean, somebody asked me, what is the theme of the movie? I hate those questions. What is the theme? I go, friendship. And I guess, you know, with friends or family, you can finish sentences for other people because you know what they're saying before they say it, even. That kind of feeling. I think that's what he was going for. Right?
Yeah, and I noticed that you did interrupt me an awful lot. We had fun. It was freezing when we did that outdoor kiss scene, but
yeah,
we managed to do it.
Yeah, we got through it somehow.
I read that that almost everybody wanted to play, or at least many of the actors were actually interested in other parts. Like the both you and Glenn wanted to play which part?
Well, we both wanted to play Mary Kay's part. I mean, I said to Larry, I didn't know Glenn wanted it then, but I said to Larry when he cast me, I said, I think I'd be much better as the lawyer trying to have the baby. You know, I just don't. He said, look, I wrote this part with you in mind, so this is the part you're playing. I said, oh, okay. And then I found out that Glenn Close said the same thing to him.
That's right.
She wanted to play that part.
Yeah, because she thought, you know, she sort of played a mothering type in World According to Garp, and she thought she was getting pigeonholed into the same part. But then when a director says, I wrote this part for you,
yeah,
and you're sort of, your hands are tied. Yeah. Were you happy with your, that was the part you wanted?
Yeah, I was fine. I went in and read for Larry, and he goes, that's perfect. That's great. He says, don't change a thing. I go, don't change a thing. We're just beginning. You know? Don't change a thing. I mean, what do I do? Just do it like you did it. Okay. But it was kind of strange because I'm playing an actor.
Right.
And that is the only time I think I played an actor.
Was Magnum P.I. on the air at that point? It's got to have been.
I think it was.
Yeah.
By 83. Yeah. I mean, you got the mustache.
It's definitely,
and you're leaping
into
like a sports
that.
Car.
And they made you jump over.
Cowboy boots,
yeah.
They made you jump into your car, jump over the door.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Do you remember the stunt guy that jumped into the car? They put him in the same costume as me, and I want to think it was you. I could be wrong. Kept coming up, and you put your hand on the shoulder, and you started talking, and then you turned, and it was the stunt guy.
Oh, that probably
that was you,
me.
Wasn't it?
I
yeah.
think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think you
to
did that three times. I mean, he was a hell of a good double.
He was.
He really was. And I mean, with the costume on, you know, it kind of helped.
So you.
No, actually, I just had a crush on him.
So. Yeah. Oh, okay. therein lies the truth. Yes.
So are you telling me that you, Tom Berenger, actually never jumped in the car?
No, but I got to tell you, you could have done it. You could have done it. I think just about any.
Right.
Well, most of the people in here could have done it.
But what's crazy is.
But the hardest thing was faking.
Failing.
The failing.
Right. The failing part.
Yeah.
But I saw what is clearly an outtake, because it's not the shot used in the movie, of the stunt guy jumping in the car. Mm-hmm. And to your point about confusing the two, I mean, I saw it. That was you. But it wasn't.
No. I have to say that's the only guy I've seen that looked almost exactly like me.
Is there some chance that he's here right now?
he's with Kevin Costner.
That's right.
Right there.
If I had a twin brother, I'd let him do these shows instead of me.
Split the money. Yeah, it's a good deal. It's a good deal. I was interested, Tom, backstage, you were telling me that idea of bringing the actors together, that Oliver Stone did something similar on Platoon.
Yeah, Platoon, we had, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks jungle training. I mean, it was intense. Major sleep deprivation, too. We probably had like 3 hours sleep a night, and we were really cranky, mean, tired, pissed off. But we learned everything.
Where were you shooting? I forgot.
Philippines.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
in Luzon. And that's an interesting story, too, because, you know, we're shooting in Luzon in the Philippines, and we were there, and then one day, Charlie and I are like kind of standing there having smoke, watching the lighting guys or electricians pulling the cables up and whatnot. And he says, "Look at those guys over there, Berenger." I go, "What?" He goes, "They're staring at me." I go, "Hey, right they are. Why?" He goes, "I don't know. I think maybe they recognize me from when I was here as a kid." I go, he says, "Apocalypse was shot here."
Right.
I said, "Oh. Well, you know, these crews, I mean, some of these guys are, like, they're older than us, you know." And I said, probably the same guys, right? Mm. Filipino crew guys. They seem to know everything about shooting war films in the jungle. And he says, yeah, that must be it. And I said, "My dad was here, too, in Luzon." And he said, "What movies was he in?" I said, "What? What movies was your dad in?" I go, "Charlie, my dad wasn't an actor. He was a..."
That wasn't a movie.
"Turner, he was here. He was here in a tank."
Yeah.
In World War II and the liberation, the real war, Charlie. Yeah. Oh. Wow. Hollywood kids. Yeah.
I like that we got to that. We got to show the movie, but I do want to get a sense of where the movie, how the film has affected your lives, and at what point, you know, I'm curious about that. I mean, you guys must get tired of answering questions like this, but it is interesting to me, and I think to others, if there's any sense during the process or even immediately after that you have made something that is going to matter to people for 40 years, you know, that resonated to the extent that it really strikes people that it's going to remain an important cultural touchstone.
You know, I think it was interesting because Big Chill was turned down by 7 studios.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody wanted to make the movie.
Too much talking and no action, you know.
And
too many lead characters, right?
Right. And finally, Johnny Carson's production company agreed to do it. And so we had no idea. The studio did not think they had any kind of movie on their hands. I mean, they thought it was a little, you know, maybe it's charming, whatever, until the Toronto Film Festival. And it won the People's Award, you know, that year at the festival. And suddenly they went, "Oh, my goodness." And then they started advertising it. So I don't think... I didn't have any. I mean, I felt like it was going to be a really good movie because we were all so good,
and we wanted it to be. But
and it was a wonderful script, and Larry's a great.
I had a, I I think I said this in one interview too, is I said, I think it was a movie of a generation. And I said, the first one would have been The Graduate and then this, The Big Chill. So it's like bookends.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
No, but and, yeah, bookends and, of a baby boomer generation. Yeah,
and obviously we can't talk about The Big Chill without acknowledging the significant role that that wonderful music played in its lasting power.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the music, all selected by Lawrence Kasdan's wife, Meg, who plays the flight attendant who hits on you, by the way, in the film.
Larry gave us all tapes of that of the music that they were interested in using, and we listened to it during while we were shooting.
One thing that Lawrence Kasdan said that what he wanted, apparently he announced it to the cast, you may have been the person who said this, I can't recall, but that all of that intent of all the time you guys spent together before the cameras started rolling was he wanted to create a situation where even when you guys were angry at each other, right, even when there was conflict on screen, that all seven of you were kind to each other. He wanted that to exude through the screen. And I think clearly it paid off. There's just a lovely moment in the film that after you and William Hurt have the big fight, and then he doesn't even say anything to you, but the next morning at the breakfast scene, he comes up and he just puts his hands on your shoulders, and you just look up and smile. I don't know. It's a beautiful, beautiful little human moment that I love.
I think Larry really loved these characters, and they were people that he obviously knew, but that's great. When a writer loves their characters, you know, as I'm sure Tennessee Williams did, you know that he
That's
loved
right.
those
no,
all those characters, and, you know, even the ones with flaws. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Tom Berenger, Joe Beth Williams, thank you for wrapping up this festival for us. And thank you, everybody, for coming. And enjoy The Big Chill from 1983.
Thanks for listening once again. I hope you will keep an eye or ear out for next week's episode, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I guess we're doing Damaged Month because The Rewatchables is doing, what did they say? It was like, something low. I'm not sure, but just we're doing some episodes on some interesting dialogue and characters and all that fun stuff, but please listen, and thanks for hearing me ramble once again. So enjoy. Or thanks for listening, sorry. Jeez. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening.